This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
What is up, everyone? Welcome to DC Standem, your guided tour of the DC multiverse. I'm your host, Mike Cicchini, the editor-in-chief of DennyGeek.com. And each week, I'm the guy bringing you discussions with writers, artists, actors, and experts covering everything from DC Comics to the movies and TV that make up the DCU. This episode, I'm joined by co-showrunners Todd Helbing and Brent Fletcher to break down all the cool spoilers and secrets in the first two episodes of Superman and Lois Season 3. But before we get started, I'd like to tell you that this episode of DC Standem is presented by DC's Justice League Cosmic Chaos. Outright Games and Warner Brothers are calling DC fans of all ages to unite against chaos in the all-new open-world action-adventure game DC's Justice League Cosmic Chaos. Designed to be fun for the whole family, you can play as Batman, Superman, or Wonder Woman to battle the mischievous Mr. Mixius Pitalik, who has summoned Starro the Conqueror and other supervillains to keep the Justice League busy while he becomes the new self-appointed mayor of Happy Harbor. There's more DC heroes in this one, too. Players can also interact with other Justice League members. Green Lantern, Cyborg, The Flash, and Aquaman all make cameos throughout the game. You can enjoy DC's Justice League Cosmic Chaos with friends and family in two-player instant action couch co-op to engage with the exciting and hilarious gameplay. Justice League Cosmic Chaos is available to play now on PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Nintendo Switch, Xbox One, Xbox XS, and Steam. For more information, head to OutrightGames.com and follow Outright Games on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok for all the latest updates and information on Justice League Cosmic Chaos. So, having watched episodes 1 and 2, you know, between this and Philip Kennedy Johnson's run on Action Comics right now, it's a real banner year for Lois and Clark being like overtly horny for each other. And that's just like such a great change of pace. So I just want to know, like, you know, it is like kind of a different dynamic. Like, I love how other characters are even commenting on how they're almost like teenagers in that first episode. So, like, what was, you know, obviously, there's more to come with that, and we'll talk about episode 2 separately because I don't want to spoil anything in the episode 1 portion of this. But, you know, what was it like writing that, and you know, how do you feel about kind of just digging into their relationship in a way that hasn't really been explored on screen before?
I mean, we thought it was fun. That what's awesome to us about them as a couple is they're a great couple, and so like their chemistry for each other is part of that. And we wanted to give the audience a taste of that, especially after all that we've put them through for the last 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, let the audience enjoy it as well as Lois and Clark and see a different shade of these two and go, wow, like, this is a different version of Lois and Clark than I'm used to seeing.
It's also like the boys are, you know, they're like in the first episode, they turn 16 and, you know, they're settling in the Smallville. And, you know, sometimes in a marriage, you know, you don't get as many opportunities to just be who you are before being parents. And now I think they're in this season, the boys are starting to do their own thing. They have friends, they want to go out, they, you know, John gets his license. And so they're just there's more opportunities for them to fall back into Lois and Clark and the two people that they fell in love with. And we wanted to explore that.
You know, forgive me if this is a really stupid question, and this is not something that I wrote down, but why is John the one who's eager to get his license? Is it just because Jordan can fly that he's not in a hurry to get it? I mean, because didn't he also get a truck from Talro?
He did, but if you could fly, would you ever drive?
Yeah. He absolutely ends up, he sells it. Yeah. Really?
Yeah. And like, well, like when we say, there's a line, like what John says in that porch scene, it's like, this is my freedom. And, you know, we remember when we turned 16, I know like nowadays kids sort of push it off a little bit more because of Uber, and it's just not a big of a deal, at least in LA, it's not as big of a deal as it was in small towns when growing up. But that feeling when you're 16 and you get your license and it's independence, and the second you drive in a car by yourself for the first time, that feeling you get, it's like, oh my God, I can go anywhere I want, you know? And it's like, that is like, John just needed that sense of independence and freedom. And, you know, Jordan can now just fly to wherever he wants in the world. And John, you know, this is his version of that.
You know, I love that we've spent the first 5 minutes talking about stuff like this, because at one point while I was watching episode one, in my notes, I wrote down, I just said, this is such a low key episode. But then literally no sooner did I write that than the Atom Man fight breaks out, which is a spectacular action sequence. You know, this show has always, I think, done a really good job of balancing both of those elements. But did you feel, especially as we get into some of the heavier elements of the season, you know, like, how are you balancing that now? Because I feel like, you know, there's always the danger that the human drama gets undermined when, you know, when there's superpowered fights breaking out.
Yeah, it's the challenge of the show to be. Stories first from the emotional perspective, you know, and like, what's going on with our characters? What's the journey for this episode? And then, you know, then we'll talk about plot, and we'll talk about, you know, what kind of spectacle they're going to deal with. And just, you know, it's trying to find the right measurements for both and what works together to be satisfying, because we're fans as well. We want to watch, you know, we're asking to sit down and watch 45 minutes of a show. And, you know, what we think we provide on this show is you get a little bit of everything. You get serious drama, you get action spectacle, superhero stuff, and, you know, some humor. And I think that's in a sense of hope underneath all of that. And I think that's maybe not what it maybe separates us from a lot of other things that are on TV.
So this is where I think we need to start touching a little bit on episode two and some spoilers as well. And don't worry, like, none of this stuff will be released until, you know, after that episode. But we've got two villains operating at the moment. You know, you have Bruno Mannheim, which I love, by the way, and Onomatopoeia. But this show never shows you its hand in the first few episodes. I've learned now, after two seasons, never to set my expectations on who these villains actually are based on the first few episodes of the year. But that being said, and, you know, and we also know that Luther is coming later this season. So, you know, is that like hard swerve something that we should be, you know, should kind of be expecting now? Or like, do you feel like you can be a little bit more straightforward with some of this stuff out of the gate and then fool us later on down the line?
Well, I think, you know, there's always going to be an element of like mysteries and turns and, you know, just to keep people interested, along with, you know, like the core really family drama that we want to, the stories that we want to tell. But I think it, as far as like, you know, is there a guy that's showing up in a steel suit who turns out to be John Henry Irons and not Captain Luther, that kind of stuff? Probably it's not in this, not in the same way, for sure.
But maybe more emotionally impactful. You know, it's like we everything's intentional this season. And it's, you know, we have a lot of big plot reveals. And so I think there's some I think it's built a little differently than we've built the last couple of seasons, so that you don't feel like we're repeating ourselves, you know, and because I think the story demanded it. We're trying to tell like our biggest, best story yet. And it just couldn't be like the others.
And this is the most nuanced version of Bruno Mannheim I think I've ever seen, you know, which is just not a word that you normally associate with that character. You know, so what can you tell us about Bruno and what was casting him like as well? Because again, I've never seen a Bruno Mannheim like this.
Yeah, I think like with all of our characters, we try to you know, we're obviously inspired by the comics and what other people have done and try to honor them best we can, but we also, you know, we're trying to tell stories about more complicated people. And so with Bruno, you know, he grew up in South Metropolis. It was sort of the forgotten part, a forgotten area. You know, it was originally called the suicide slums, and you get to see like what that community means to him and what he's trying to do. And some of the decisions that he makes, you know, may be bad decisions or may lead to bad things happening, but you start to see why he's doing it. And that's where all the complexity comes in. And so we really wanted to present somebody that just, you know, mustache twirling villains just don't work. They're just not interesting. So, I mean, they're, you know, Chad Coleman, who we just love, you know, Brett and I, like The Wire is one of our favorite shows of all time. Yeah. And so we've been fans for a long time of his. So we felt very fortunate to get him to play him. And we knew that he could do give the nuance that we needed. But we just want, you know, like he said in one of the interviews, I think people may root for Bruno. And I think that that's true.
Because they understand him. They may not agree with him, but the goal for us is to have you understand the why. And that always makes it easier to write too, to be honest. You know, mm-hmm. If you don't understand why somebody's doing something, you've made a mistake, you know, in these type of shows, I think. And so for Bruno, we really dug in and we do understand every move he makes and why he's making it. And we're excited for people to see the why.
You know, it's such a wonderful inversion too, because there's that scene in episode two where Superman shows up to confront Bruno, you know, and he lands on his balcony, and it's like the kind of imagery you usually associate with like those classic, you know, Superman versus corporate Luthor confrontations, right? But that's not what it is. And Bruno just like lays into him and he just has to kind of stand there and take it. And I love the fact that while Bruno is explaining himself, it's like literally in the shadow of LexCorp Tower in the background there. And I think that alone kind of, I don't know. I just thought that was really well handled. And I think it speaks to the kind of antagonist that he is, and that it's, you know, it really plays with expectations in a way I didn't expect.
Thanks for noticing that. And I think you'll see as the story unpacks and as it's a slow burn on the Luther introduction, that is intentional. You know, we wanted to slowly bring him in and like, but then it all ties up and it makes for a very compelling Luther when he arrives.
Speaking of that, I have to ask, when can we expect to finally meet the new Luther?
Well, we don't want to reveal that right now. But like Brent said, you get bits and pieces along the way, and it was really, it's not that we want to that we're trying to withhold anything. It's really just we want Luther sort of makes an appearance in a sideways way and in a way that we haven't done before. So we just want to make sure that it lands.
Fair enough. Episode two is obviously incredibly heavy. I mean, it's one of the most emotional episodes of this series ever. And you pull the rug on the pregnancy storyline, obviously, like, you know, but was there ever any consideration when you were first thinking about season three, you know, what was an actual pregnancy ever on the table for this season before you decided to, you know, to go with this more dramatic, you know, scarier route for Lois?
No, because the season was built around her cancer diagnosis and the cancer journey. You know, Todd and I, wow. it's the, especially during the building of the finale last year, and even a little bit before that, we had the germ of this idea because we just felt like such an important thing to discuss. Lois Lane is such an iconic character. We feel like now the audience knows this family, so we can show the audience what this journey's really like, you know? And so we've built everything in service to that story, you know? And so, pregnancy was never on the table because this was our story. This is our drive. It drives everything for us, you know? And to the point, and very intentionally, there's no magic cure. There's no thing in the fortress that's going to save Lois. This is a real cancer journey that many women are going through. You know, we did a lot of research. We talked to survivors, women that are going through it, oncologists, the CDC, a lot. Our writers did a ton of work on this so that we could tell something that people would recognize and people could relate to and learn from.
And yet in the midst of that, you know, I mean, days or hours after her diagnosis, she still manages to be, you know, Lois Lane in all the ways that we expect. But also, there's that wonderful nod to that very famous page from All-Star Superman. Yep. But it's in a different context where it's Lois who's delivering the "you're much stronger than you think you are" line. So what can you tell me? I mean, first of all, like, just talk to me about kind of, again, once again, recontextualizing this iconic piece of Superman lore. But more importantly, what was filming that scene like? Because that moment with Lois and the judge is so intense. And then, you know, there the wordless moments that follow with Lois and Superman are even more intense.
Yeah, a couple of things. Those iconic moments, if we can try to, you know, we obviously want to honor them and put as many of those moments in the show. And that was like, that's at the top of the list. We've talked about it since day one. But considering the season, it felt like such a great opportunity to tell that and have Lois be the person, you know, like, I don't know if there's anybody stronger than Lois Lane, you know, what she's been through, what she's been through on our show. And it felt like it, that scenario where Superman is with Bruno and he's hearing Bruno's point of view while he literally is starting to hear what's going on with his wife. And then to get the news as Superman, you know, and redesign that classic moment, it just felt like we could really do something special. And I'm glad that it landed for you in the way that it did.
I feel like I have to lighten this up a little bit after those questions. who's the wise guy who made Mannheim's underground lab the Rickles Street subway stop?
That's amazing that you saw that. Yeah. I think that was Adam.
Max and Adam. Yeah. We have two people on our staff, Max Chronic and Adam Malinger, that are just fountains of Superman information. And we'll go and ask them for a little nugget. Todd and I can never take credit for this stuff. Yeah. We'll have an idea, and then they will come back with splash pages and GIFs and like everything you could ever imagine faster than a computer. And they came up with that for us, and a lot of other things. Like, there's more coming.
There's a lot of Easter eggs this season. A lot.
Yeah. I also spotted Bisolo Boulevard during the Atom Man fight. And yeah. I couldn't remember if that was something that you guys had already dropped in there, but that was nice to see. There's so much, look, there's a lot of baggage that comes, like, you know, Bruno Mannheim is not a household name character, right? But for people who know his connection to, you know, the history of comics, because this is one of the first guys that Jack Kirby created when he came to DC from Marvel, you know, using Bruno Mannheim and Suicide Slum and all these other things, it does come with a certain amount of expectation from fans, because you're playing in, you know, you're playing in Jack Kirby's world, which is a little bit intense. You know, I know there's not much you can say about this, but is there anything that you can say about
it? Well, you know, we know like where this leads to, but no, there's not much we can reveal.
But picking Mannheim, it's like, yeah, Kirby's such a legend that you've got to earn, you got to have a story that earns putting him in to your show. And we felt like it's a big story for us. It's probably, it's the biggest story we've told on the series, honestly, this arc with Mannheim and how it intersects with Lois and Clark. And so we felt that was the character to bring in and to do it. And then to kind of put our stamp on it.
Yeah.
Last season's finale felt like it could have worked as a series finale. And I know some of that was by design, you know, given how, you know, given the uncertainty of everything. And you guys look, it looks like you're going to be the last show standing now that, you know, Titans and Doom Patrol have announced their final seasons. And of course, Flash is well into its final season. So are you planning for the season three finale to kind of have that same kind of, you know, could be the final if you want it to be, but also, you know, have you two given any thought to what an actual endpoint for this show would look like if you had as many seasons as you wanted to run with it?
Yeah, we have talked about a couple different versions of endpoints, you know, look, there's so much that is out of our control. So our approach always is, you know, we just want to write the best story that we can. And then, the you know, let everything sort of play out the way it's going to play out. It's, you know, if we had our druthers, we'd go 10 seasons.
Absolutely.
You know, I think that the best thing that we can always do is just tell a compelling story that the fans tune in to see. So if we just, you know, approach every season that way, you know, then we'll see what happens.
But we want to be unexpected. And so I think where the season will go and everything else, it's not like the others. And it I think it's surprising and more epic than even the season two finale.
Yeah.
And we hope that's saying a lot because we thought the season two finale was pretty big, but we've got our crew, our team has worked on this in a way and is trying to deliver something that is really big and really cool. And we can't wait for the audience to get there and see it.
Yeah.
Well, great. Thank you both so much for your time. Good luck with the new season. Good luck with wrapping on Tuesday.
And thank you.
Hope to speak to you again. That's it for this episode of DC Stand'em. Don't forget to check out our web home at dennygeek.com, where you can find all our DC coverage at dennygeek.com/DC. Drop us a line at DC Stand'em on Twitter and Instagram. Let us know what you want to hear about in upcoming episodes. I'll see what we can do to accommodate you there. Thanks again to our sponsor, Outright Games and Justice League Cosmic Chaos. Head over to OutrightGames.com for more info on this fun new game. And hey, don't forget, we also have a Marvel show. You can listen to Marvel Stand'em wherever you're listening to this show right now. Check it out. And sometimes we do these shows live, so make sure you're following Denny Geek on Twitch. That's twitch.tv/DennyGeekTV. And we're also on YouTube at youtube.com/DennyGeekUS. This has been DC Stand'em on the Denny Geek Network. Until next time, remember, folks, we stand together.